In this conference, I'd like to begin to change some of the direction of our retreat. We, of course, started with an entering into silence so that God's mercy can work in our hearts. Then we spent some time reflecting upon what is mercy? What does it mean that God is merciful? And then we started to look at individual examples, and we saw Augustine as a great example of receiving the mercy of God. And then we spent some time looking at the face of mercy that all of us are invited to contemplate so that we can receive the same kind of mercy that, for example, Augustine and many others did. This evening, though, while I would like to spend some time on what it means to receive God's mercy, I also want to begin to shift our focus of what it means to give the mercy of God, to share the mercy of God with others. And I want to take two parables of mercy, and both of them show us, on the one hand, what it means to receive God's mercy, but then on the other hand, how it is that we too can live these parables to in turn share that mercy in the concrete part of our life, which we'll continue looking at tomorrow. I want to start then with the parable that really highlights the meaning of mercy more than any other. Of course, I'm speaking about the parable of the prodigal son, or some people say more appropriately, the parable of the merciful father. And it's a longer one, so open your heart to what Christ is speaking to you in these words. Then he said, a man had two sons, and the younger son said to his father, Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me. So the father divided the property between them. After a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off to a distant country, where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. When he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck that country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to his farm to tend the swine, and he longed to eat his fill of the pods on which the swine fed, but nobody gave him any. Coming to his senses, he thought, how many of my father's hired workers have more than enough food to eat, but here I am, dying from hunger. I shall get up and go to my father, and I shall say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as you would treat one of your hired workers. So he got up and went back to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to his father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. But his father ordered his servants, quickly, bring the finest robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take the fatted calf and slaughter it. Then let us celebrate with a feast, because this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. Then the celebration began. Now the older son, who had been out in the field and on his way back, as he neared the house, he heard the sound of music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what this might mean. The servant said to him, your brother has returned, and your father has slaughtered the fatted calf, because he has him back safe and sound. He became angry, and when he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. He said to his father in reply, "Look, all these years I served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to feast on with my friends. But when your son returns, who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him you slaughter the fatted calf." He said to him, "My son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. But we must celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found." Writers and scholars throughout history, whether Catholic, Christian, or unbelieving, find in this parable one of the greatest stories ever told. There's something built into this parable that reaches us all, at a very, very deep level. And so I'd like to look at some of that so that we can see the dynamic of sin and then the dynamic of God's mercy for us. But then, so that we can see what attitude we need to have to also be merciful or a servant of mercy. First, let's look at the dynamic of sin. We see the elder son, all about his work, staying to his duty, staying to his task, apparently respecting his father. And then the younger son saying, "Father, give me the share of my inheritance." This was a very odd thing to ask, because it sort of implies that I really don't want to be around you, and really that you are still here. It's kind of an inconvenience for me. And so give me the share of the property that's mine anyway, because I'm going to inherit it. And that's the attitude. That's maybe the first part of sin. Sin begins to attract us. And then as it attracts us more and we want it, we begin to turn to the source of life. We begin to turn to God as if he's an enemy, kind of stopping us and really in the way. Let's get things moving so I can have my life. And that's the way the son went to his father. And we know what happens. He takes that, and then it says he goes off to a distant country. The Greek says, akora makra, the great emptiness, the great openness, the great nothingness. This is where we enter into when we walk into sin. We walk into nothingness. We walk into the great emptiness. Because sin never has good in it. Sin is always a choosing of nothing instead of choosing of what is real. Whenever we sin, it's true, we're always choosing a particular sin. But every sin is really just a twisting of something good. It's choosing the less of what would be truly good. And so this is where he goes. He goes into nothingness. And then he begins to feel the fruit of nothingness. And he finds himself in desolation. Already, we see a providential work of God's mercy. And that is misery. We looked at that. Even the sense that I am hurt and broken because of my sin can be a redeeming feeling. I've known some who have felt this desolation the misery of sin, and then began from that misery to have a longing to come back. And this is what the son does. First, he sets in his mind, well, since I've sinned so bad, there's no way my father will take me back, and so at least I'm going to go back and at least be a servant. At least I can white-knuckle it and be a slave. At least I can be somewhat near God. This is sometimes the attitude that we have when we want to return to God after sin. I'm obviously unworthy, and so there's no way I'm going to be accepted back fully. And that's what we believe. And so the son goes to his father. And there's an interesting note. It says, while he's off at a distance, the father sees him. That means the father's already been looking for him. He's been waiting for him. He's been longing for his return. So for all of us, the Father longs for us to return fully. And then we know the embrace. He comes, begins to give his predefined spiel to his father about why he should be a servant. His father doesn't even hear it. He says, gets the servants, put a cloak on him, give him a ring, put sandals on his feet, slaughter the fatted calf, my son is back. That's all the father can think of, is the joy and the celebration of having what was lost now found. And these marks of honor and dignity and authority and sonship are all given to his son. And there's a reunion and a celebration of joy. All of us have identified as the prodigal son in one way or another. This is why the parable reaches us, because we've all have known God's mercy in one degree or another. And it's an awesome mercy to stay in. But we also have to be merciful ourselves. Even when someone has a great conversion and experiences this full warmth of the Father's mercy and this awe of being received back after walking into the great nothing and despising God, even after someone has that, it can happen to us that we then start turning a little bit into the other son. To the older son. After we come back and are faithful for a while, maybe for a good while, we start to say, I've been around for a while, and now I kind of have a right to things, and I really have a right to determine what should and shouldn't be as far as the way God's mercy works in other people's lives. This was the general attitude of the older son. He wasn't ready to go along with that great mercy of the Father. Instead, he was critical. He recalled the sin of his younger brother, which he didn't even identify as his brother. He said, this son of yours. One of the things that happened to us, especially if we've been faithful for a good while, as we start having a similar critical view of what happens in someone else's life, we start to have a similar critical view of those who sin against us, whether it be in small or big ways, when in fact, God's mercy, which we have known, wants to be in deep as deeply in the other person too. To be merciful, then, we can't be the older brother. To be merciful, We must be like the Father. We must be merciful like the Father. And that's what Pope Francis calls the motto for this coming year of mercy. He says, merciful like the Father, therefore, is the motto of this holy year. In mercy, we find proof of how God loves us. He gives his entire self, always, freely, asking nothing in return. He comes to our aid whenever we call upon him. He comes to assist us in our weakness. And his help consists in helping us accept his presence and closeness to us. Day after day, touched by compassion, we also can become compassionate toward others. The Pope is inviting us to first, what we've already talked about, receive the Father's mercy. And then he's inviting us in turn to be merciful and compassionate to others. Let's then look at the Father in this parable of the prodigal son, now from the viewpoint of not us receiving mercy, but us giving mercy. So now each of you are the merciful Father. Someone you know and like doesn't like you, and they want to get something from you. And they ask you, give me what's mine. Well, if we're merciful, we say, I'm not going to help you sin. But this is yours, and so take it. And sometimes we know that it'll be misused. And yet we continue to love. We continue to wait. The person we don't like goes off and hurts themselves badly. Sinful older brother, I knew it. I knew it. That's what would happen, and that's what you deserve. No, that's not the merciful Father. If the merciful Father got news of his pain, his heart would be gushing forth. So for us, the people we love, maybe our children sometimes, when we know they go off and hurt themselves, we don't say, I told you so. We say, how can I help to bring you back? The prodigal son begins to return, and the merciful Father isn't, I don't care if he comes back or not. He's going to learn the lesson the hard way. The merciful Father is looking for him and is waiting for him. This is perhaps the most told advice to mothers and grandmothers who have a son or a grandson or granddaughter away from the faith, a daughter away from the faith, is keep a door open and a candle lit. Be ready for their return and have some light for them if and when they come back. That's how we can be merciful like the Father. The son comes back, makes his strong confession. I've sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. You're right, and so you're going to have to make up for it. No. He does the opposite. He doesn't even listen to it. And he restores his son's dignity. That's something we all can do a little more for one another. Is when we see someone slip, maybe it can just be in a passing conversation. Maybe it can be in our family or an interchange. We don't want the pound of flesh. We say, we recognize it, and we try to clothe it as much as we can. Sometimes we fail in that, and then we need to turn to the Father's mercy again. But eventually, we need to be merciful ourselves so as to be able to give a cloak to someone who's just made themselves half naked because of the silly word that they just said. The sandals. In this time frame, typically servants didn't wear sandals, and the son wanted to become a servant. So the father says, bring his sandals, put them on his feet. He's not a servant, he's my son. He belongs to me. Sometimes we don't belong to each other as much as we're called to. That's part of being merciful like the Father, is seeing in our brothers and sisters not just someone, but someone who belongs to us. Because when someone belongs to us, we treat them quite a bit different. We treat them with a new friendliness, a new kindness, a new respect. The son did something very bad, but he came back to life, and it was a source of joy. That means that the merciful Father took joy in his son. For ourselves to be merciful, we too need to take joy in the good that others have received, even if those others have offended us. That is hard. And sometimes it needs to be sorted out. Lord, I forgive my friend. And Lord, I'm grateful for that gift that he has or that she has. And even though I don't feel like it, I am grateful, Lord. And the more we walk in that, the more joy we have, the more merciful we really become. That's how we can become merciful like the Father and live this great motto out. That's the first parable, the prodigal son, showing us God's mercy and then showing us how we are called to be merciful. Let's look at one more parable to see the same thing in maybe even a stronger way. And this one is the parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus replied, "A man fell victim to robbers as he went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. They stripped and beat him and went off, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be walking down that road, but when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite came to the place, and when he saw him, he passed by on the opposite side. But a Samaritan traveler who had come upon him saw him and was moved with compassion at the sight. He approached the victim, poured oil and wine over his wounds and bandaged them. Then he lifted him up on his own animal, took him to an inn and cared for him. The next day, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper with the instruction, 'Take care of him. If you spend more than what I have given you, I shall repay you on my way back.' Which of these, in your opinion, was neighbor to the robber's victim?" He answered, "The one who treated him with mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." In this parable, too, we see first an image of God's mercy to us, because it's humanity who is the man who was beaten and robbed and left half dead. The evil one, when he leads us into sin, takes our life and puts us in the terrible situation of on the edge of eternal death. That's humanity because of sin. And then if humanity tries to return on its own, it can never succeed. When it uses its own devices, it never works. When it uses merely natural religion, nothing happens. The priest and the Levite pass by. But then someone comes who can save us. Jesus, who is the true Good Samaritan. He comes by, sees us in our condition, and is moved with compassion. What does he do? He takes us. He pours the wine and oil of the sacraments upon us to bring us healing, to bring us salvation. He brings us into the inn of the church to be able to be healed, to be able to be looked after. He pays the debt that's made. This is his love. Jesus ultimately is the Good Samaritan. But then Jesus in turn calls us to do the same. He restores us first so that we can enjoy him. And then as an outflow of that, he calls us to be merciful to others. This should be a joy for us. And yet sometimes it can still be a challenge. And so let's look at this a little bit more to understand how we too are called to be the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan did three things. The Good Samaritan stopped. And then he had compassion. And then he did something concrete. That's what made him the Good Samaritan. If we take that simple teaching, we can go a long way with being merciful to others. Notice in the parable, the first two, the priest and the Levite, walked right by. They were indifferent, or they were so busy with what they were doing that they didn't stop. That's the first law of mercy, is we have to be aware of what's going on around us and not just aware of what's going on in us. This sounds so simple, but it's in the real concrete activity of daily life that it can be so hard, because it means paying attention. It means that this guy can handle it and he's doing it on his own and he wants to do it on his own. Since I'm paying attention, I'm not going to mess with that. I'm going to let him do his thing. Oh, but now he's struggling. Okay, now I'll come in and help. We have to be aware. Just think of family life, how sensitive it is. And yet, if we're continually, or as much as we can, if we're continually aware of our surroundings, of what someone may need or may not need, and helping where is appropriate, we'll begin to be a good Samaritan. The good Samaritan stopped because he saw someone who was in real need, someone that wouldn't make it. There are certain situations that we're called to stop because you in particular can do something. It can be real small too. That's still merciful. What did he do after he stopped? It says he had compassion. The word compassion comes from two Latin words, cum and passus. Cum means with, and passus means suffering or to suffer. so to suffer with. Part of mercy is putting ourselves in the suffering of the other person. This isn't always easy, but it can always be tried. We can always attempt it to see what is that like to be in that situation. When we do that and we see that doesn't look good, that seems quite hard, we begin to see it from their perspective. We begin to have compassion. But it's not just a feeling. Sometimes we stop there. I've been guilty of that too many times, where I feel strong compassion, but then I don't do anything. Jesus calls us in this parable to take that third step, to do something concrete, to really go out. I realize that in some situations it's not possible. And yet, when we have that readiness, not a readiness that's ready to do anything without even thinking about it, may the Lord save us, but the readiness that is of a servant, the readiness to see, there's someone in need, and now it's a small need, so I have, the right amount of compassion. I'm not bleeding for something that's small. And there's the chance. That's what we're called to do, so that we too can be merciful like the Father. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.